Throughout this week, we're asking singularly unqualified people to tell us what they thought of the year that was and the year that's to come. It's not entirely true of my next guest, unfortunately. His name is Charlie Pickering, and he's performing the miraculous feat of being on television and radio at the same time. Welcome to the show.
Isn't that only done by, like, Rush Limbaugh or someone who they webcam, like, webcast themselves in the studio as they bloviate?
Or indeed Alan Partridge. But that's exactly another conversation. Right. 2013, I have this syndrome where I can never remember what happened in what year. So this is actually partly just revision for me. It's allowing people to, oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
That happened. But because you've been given a brief, you've studied.
Oh, haven't I, though?
Mm.
I'm studying right now. I'll talk about the things I found most interesting this year and that I think have longer running tentacles that are going to run through the way the world is.
Grand thematic.
Yeah, that's it. I'm going conceptual.
Good.
This is my conceptual album.
This is good. Yes.
I actually think that regardless of what Time magazine may say about the Pope, Edward Snowden is the biggest newsmaker of the year.
I think there's a very good argument for that.
1% of the information that he has been released. 1%. To give you some idea.
That's frightening, actually.
I actually heard Greg Sheridan of The Australian say that Snowden and The Guardian should have been more like WikiLeaks and dumped everything at once.
Right.
So apparently turning completely, having complete disregard for his own news instincts of stringing a story out for maximum impact. Mm. Whereas Snowden has released 1% of the information that he has. And let's have a look at what that's done. Mm. And to me, it's the story that relates to every single person on the planet. And not every single person on the planet realizes it yet.
Yep.
And that's why I think it's big and interesting. Mm-hmm. We have had this explosion of technology worldwide. Particularly in Australia, where there's more smartphones than humans or something.
Yes.
In Australia. It's crazy. Mm. There's actually more smartphones than regular phones. There are more mobile phones than people. We have never been more connected, and it's the same worldwide. Everyone demands broadband all the time, or 3G or 4G or whatever it is. Everyone wants to be connected. We want these devices. We want to be able to communicate with each other all the time.
And what's extraordinary about it is it doesn't even seem that economic development's a prerequisite. You have developing countries where people have access to these smartphones, and that's how they're communicating. It's genuinely a worldwide phenomenon in a way that I really didn't think would be the case.
So more than ever, everyone's connected, and we have, almost without thinking, all grabbed for the latest, shiniest phone with the greatest technology to connect in a way we never have before. And what Snowden revealed to all of us is that we did that without thinking about how it works the other way. Mm-hmm. Rather than us being in connected with the world, how is the world connected with us without us realizing?
Yep.
I think what he has done is precipitated at least the beginning of a discussion about, do we all agree that just by buying the latest iPhone, we deserve to be spied on by any government in the world? It's not just our own government. It's not just protecting citizens within sort of sovereign borders, to borrow a much-coined phrase. Am I comfortable with the US government knowing everything about, knowing who I call, who I deal with? And it's funny, I have conversations with people at work and they say that old argument, well, if you've got nothing to hide.
Yeah, I think generally speaking, that's the prevailing view, isn't it?
I think it is, but I don't think people think about what may happen where, let's say, you text a wrong number to someone.
Yeah.
Right? And you text...
And it happens to be a very wrong number.
Yeah, and you actually text to someone who's being monitored, and all of a sudden you're caught in a net. Your text may have been, are you going to the fancy dress party this Friday? But the metadata just says that you contacted this person.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, and let's say you go on holiday, you want to go to Disneyland with your family, and you land in LAX airport, and all of a sudden you're on a no-fly list, you don't know why, and you get pulled in, strip searched, and then put on a plane back to Australia, and you can never go to the States. That's a very real prospect in a very small and practical way.
Right.
And that's a slightly paranoid version of it, and it was a pretty bad choice of wrong number that you sent.
Yes, okay.
But the fact is, who's in control of the list of what data is important in deciding who can do what in the world?
Well, it comes down to human judgment.
Yeah.
Right? And so it comes down to relationships of trust that we have with government, for example. And so that's the big question that I suppose is to be interrogated here. But I want to come back to your 1% thing. Because what do you say has happened as a result of this 1%? Okay, there's that big picture thing. But there have been all sorts of other consequences that have flowed from that have been, I think, nothing short of epic.
Oh, absolutely. I don't think that Edward Snowden for a second gave enough thought to the fact that this gave conservative media in Australia a rod to beat the ABC with, or to target The Guardian. How did he not think of that?
How is he so irresponsible?
Of course, that's the other thing. Freedom of speech in Australia is part of this discussion. Apparently, it's important to have freedom of speech if you want to racially vilify someone, but not if you want to report government surveillance of people.
Yeah.
That's an important distinction to
That's
draw.
Right. That's right.
I understand that for national security and for certain levels of espionage, we have all of these arrangements and secret dealings going on with people, but isn't there a bigger question here? We get so angry when a government breaks a promise, like when they make a promise before the election and they don't deliver on it. Like, we've seen that in recent history here. Yep. Or if they say one thing before the election and do another, people don't like that. But what about when the government literally just doesn't bring it up and we don't think to ask about it? How do we feel about it when that stuff actually affects us? And this is kind of the bigger view I want to take of news this year and news going forward, is if we're such high information people now, we've got all these phones, we've got all our tablets and laptops, and we're all accessing more information than we ever have before. We have to consciously be high information people. For high information people, God, we don't know anything.
So we need, there's a responsibility that falls upon you once you have access to this high information. Okay then, so given this, the circumstance you've identified and the problem that you've identified, do you have some kind of prescription for the future, a resolution, a New Year's resolution, if you will, for Australia, or indeed, given the global pretensions of this discussion, the world?
This may be a bit obtuse and it might be too high concept. Okay. We need to learn that this is a New Year's resolution. Learn the difference between big data and big information. Because the fact is, I see great promise in big data.
Mm-hmm.
I see that we have an ability to crunch numbers that we have never had before.
Who's we?
Human beings.
Okay.
So we know some things that we never had before. When the GFC hit, there were two economic theories that got deployed in different parts of the world. One was austerity, which said the key to getting the economy back on track is to cut all government spending to get deficits under control.
Yep.
And that's what you saw employed in a lot of places in Europe.
In Europe, yeah.
You saw a different approach in Australia and also in the States and Asia to say, no, the key is stimulus. Now, what used to happen is you could deploy different strategies like that, and then politicians would just argue about how well it went. It turns out now we can crunch the hard data of all of those economies, and we see that an austerity approach killed economies. It made it worse.
So this is big data. What was the alternative?
Big information. Which is just news stories and white noise guiding the way that we interpret the way the world is. These two approaches played out in the 2012 presidential election. You had Mitt Romney's team who could not believe they didn't win the election because they had big crowds at all their rallies and everyone said they hated Obama, and you know, everyone we spoke to said we had this thing in the bag. And then you had the Obama camp who just had a great big computer. They used targeted approaches to voters that they statistically knew would vote for them. They turned out the vote and they were running computer simulations every night based on actual data, and those simulations kept predicting what the outcome was.
So big data was the way to success. Big data is the way to cope with big information, which is the problem that we have in our age. Is this?
And yeah, and if you look at our domestic political situation, and let's bring this back home and how it can apply, what I think is fascinating is politicians do a poll of people's opinion in the electorate, and that's what they form their policy on, and they shift and they change. That's turning out to be more and more disastrous for politicians goes on, because it's so reactionary, because it turns out, despite all this information, the electorate's actually low information. So they're basing that gut on chatter. They're following the Romney model of someone said this, I heard on the radio that, and they base that opinion, they feed that back to the politicians, and the politicians chase that and come up with policies that are ludicrous, like buying back rickety fishing vessels.
Well, I haven't done it yet.
But that's where the policies come from.
Yeah.
But what's really interesting is within government departments, so you know the academics that study, and academics aren't the answer to everything. I'm sorry, Waleed, they're not. But
I'm going to kick you out in a second.
The fact is that the people that make the policy documents that are meant to brief ministers and meant to brief shadow ministers, they're actually operating on big data. They're actually coming up with ideas that if you apply them in the real world will somehow hit the same conditions that big data suggests is there. And we need to start listening more to that research, because that research has finally come up to a standard where we can crunch the numbers and get a good idea. We could almost, if we had Obama's computer, rather than trying to gauge how an election would work out in Ohio, if we used Obama's computer to say, what would this policy do in Australia, then maybe we can reality test policy and go, and then go to the people and go, do you know what? We reckon this will work, not based on ideology, not based on a focus group of 1,000 people over a weekend that weren't too busy to pick up their phone. We can actually get some policies, apply it to data and go, do you know what? This is kind of going to work out.
Yeah,
let's use the smarts that we have to start shaping the future. And that's why I'm running for president.
Charlie Pickering, host of The Project on Channel 10 with his controversial suggestion for evidence-based policy. I'm not sure it'll ever get up, Charlie.
Was that way too much of a thought bubble?
No. I think it's a big thought bubble, and that's what we're looking for. We're looking for ambition.
Is everyone just going to just ring up now and go, what was that?
I'll get texts, and people will either like your thought bubble or they'll want to smash it. And that's what democracy is all about, and we'll see how your presidential campaign runs. Yeah. All the best with it.
We need some kind of referendum before I can launch my presidential campaign.
Probably true. And text to RN Drive 0418 226 576 is that referendum. Good to have you in the studio again. It's been a while.
Yeah, thanks.
Charlie Pickering, host of The Project on Network 10, taking us through his thoughts on the year.